Hi, I'm Nick.
Hi, I'm Thomas.
And this is the Unbossing Podcast.
A show about unleashing the full potential of every organization.
Nagarro is a global company in the digital services space. We create digital products and services for our clients. And we have the great privilege to work for some of the world's best firms. We have literally dozens and dozens of the world's top names that we are helping produce the digital products and services that you may use in it every day. My own background is in engineering. I grew up in the more of the operations management side. And by the way, that was a very good way to connect with culture, because you can see then that the kind of culture that maybe, say, a Toyota created, with the whole philosophy of just-in-time and reducing waste and Muda, and then building techniques around it like Kanban or single minute exchange of dies or Andon cords, but then taking it into culture, you know, cell manufacturing, multi-skilling, you know, Kaizen, continuous improvement, people owning their quality, not having quality inspectors. So I think in operations management, you start to get a sense of this. It depends on how you view it. If you see it as a much more the mechanistic side, you can see that also. There are elements of the whole Ford Motor Company, you know, everyone on the assembly line, each person turning a spanner to put the Model T together, right? Or you can see the other alternative models, right? And I have this kind of theory that as our technology becomes stronger and stronger with respect to the kinds of problems we are trying to solve, each individual human being can do more and more, right? So if you were building the pyramids in the old world without machines, and you probably needed thousands of slaves to cut and carry these blocks of stone, you know, for hundreds of miles or whatever, you then probably needed a hierarchy. But if you have to make a mobile app, you don't need a hierarchy. Yeah, so which can probably do a lot, but you know, the technology is so powerful that even a single person can do a lot. So anyway, so just so that kind of idea got into Nagarro, and I can talk a lot about its influences. And Nagarro is today listed on the Frankfurt Stock Exchange in the SDAX index now. And we have people from all over the world. You know, our senior management team has people from more than 16, 17 countries. We have colleagues from all over the world. We operate with clients in about 50 countries. So yeah, very global, trying to be an agile, global, entrepreneurial company.
Wonderful. Manas, when you tell this story with no quality inspection anymore, I know it a bit from the tractor production from a much earlier life. What a revolution that was, when suddenly the people, the teams themselves were trusted to deliver the right quality, and not anymore an army of quality inspectors. And I still remember the amazing results, namely that the error rate went down so tremendously, yeah, that at the end of the day, you indeed didn't need this quality inspection anymore. And Nick, that leads me to this moment also of trust. Yeah, the moment I tell to somebody, listen, anyway, do it now, but you know, Big Brother will be watching you at the end of the day if you did it right. Or the next alternative, hey, it depends on you if that thing is right. The results will differ tremendously. I fully agree with you.
Yeah. I think that all of us have this autonomous entrepreneurial urge inside of us. This, we all can appreciate beauty, we can appreciate excellence, we can be inspired, and we can also be told what to do, micromanaged, frustrated, even sabotage what is we're supposed to do. So yeah, there is this huge range of alternatives. And on one end, you are unleashing tremendous power, tremendous intellectual, emotional power. On the other end, you are just using people as machines, their hands.
My hand. Hand.
So, there's just this, and I find this whole topic very exciting. And that's why this whole podcast that you have and this whole idea that you're promoting of unbossing, it is just so exciting that you made a thing out of it that you are pushing forward and hope to influence the world. So very, 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 very cool.
Very cool. Thank you. I have to give these flowers to you, because it's Unik who came up with the unbossing moniker, which also captured me. I heard it for the first time in my life from Nick, and I heard this word, and it was so provocating, so powerful to me that I was in from that moment. So flowers for that go to Nick. Manas, question, Nagaro, was it from the beginning an unbossed company, how we define it, or was that something which you had to install?
So I think, you know, for us, this whole idea of unbossing is not a religion. Yeah? I think it is very pragmatic. It is just what makes sense. Yeah? It's just what makes sense. I think we always had a very intimate relationship with our colleagues as a small company, like any startup would. And we also realized very early that, at least among the founders, and we had 5-6 founders, my branch of Nagaro had five founders. And we needed to get to a point where we should just take, we should not wait for consensus or agreement. We should just move and just let people stop us if they felt that we were going in the wrong direction. So that idea of each of us being entrepreneurs and doing our thing and just being careful enough to collaborate was very early on, right? I think there was also a moment of shock when we started to get a bit hierarchical. I remember that there was a project which had some issues. And the client was visiting, a German client was visiting, and we're trying to work through the issues. And I, before the client visit, you know, I had the senior most boss in that entire, you know, chain create a PowerPoint with, you know, why that there was not really an issue or why it was the client's issue, and lots of slides, maybe 20 slides, 25 slides. And when the client did come, you know, the client just dismissed all of that and said, this is not appropriate. And I got really upset that we were not able to make the client happy. So I left the meeting and I went straight to the floor where people were programming. And I found one guy on the team and I sat down with him and said, you know, this is the problem we are having. What do you think? And we worked for 3 or 4 hours. And 3 or 4 hours later, the problem which had taken maybe 2-3 months of discussions, etc., was more or less solved, right? Or at least 60-70% solved. So it at once opened my eyes to the fact that a smart person on the team who's actually doing the work knows a lot more than, you know, all these people. And as it filters up the chain, you get more and more noise and less signal very often, especially where a crisis is concerned, right? Positive news, of course, gets amplified, but the crisis gets all hidden away and all kinds of reasons get made. And so this was a big realization, I would say, enlightenment of a sort. another such thing, of course, you know, I've been in operations consulting in Europe when I was very young. And there too, I saw this, that the silos that were created by these org designs would just lead to there being no communication between these groups, no reevaluation of whether the old approaches still made sense or not, because everyone was in their cocoon, right? And you would see large companies, and you would go in as a young 25-year-old, 26-year-old consultant with the air cover provided by some professor, but you were doing the work, and discover that they were just doing things non-optimally because of org design. Mm-hmm. And so then there was this idea, you know, and these things are happening side by side. And there was this idea that in the long run, in the future, there would be a system, an IT system, that would do away with the need for hierarchy, because everyone would just communicate, would get all the information they needed from the system, would put the ideas in the system, it would nudge people the right way, and so on, right? So these three threads, you know, the consulting realization, the internal Nagarro realization, and then this idea of a system. I even tried to make that my PhD topic. My professor was not interested, so we didn't do it. But these three all combined later to create what we now have, which is the, you know, having it as an institutionalized thing in Nagarro. So to some extent, to a short answer to your question, the seeds were always there. I think it took us a while to put it all together. And again, it's not, you know, as I started off by saying, it's not a religion. It is. At some places, you do need some structure, and you know, you do need some minimal structure. But the question should always be, can we avoid it? Can we do without it? And always try to reduce structure rather than add structure.
Mm-hmm. Nick, what do you think of that, sir? Because I know what that does to you when you hear Manas saying the org structure as a competitive advantage or as a competitive burden. I know what that does to you, Nick, when you hear that.
Yeah, it's something that continuously come back. We see companies invest millions of dollars in innovating new products and services. And then when they think about how are we going to produce and sell these products, they just copy paste the org chart of the best competitor on the market. Whereas the way you design your organization is definitely a means to success. And so I can fully relate with Manas. And I also, my follow-up question was going to be, so what are your internal benchmarks when you're growing the company? But you kind of already answered that one. It's like continuously having that reflection. Do we need structure? And if yes, what kind of structure do we need so that it creates value rather than it blocks the process? Nevertheless, we are conditioned human beings. We've been working in these hierarchical structures for 3,000 years. So I can imagine when you start scaling your business, it's unavoidable that you sometimes go a little bit too far in structure and then you have to go back. And this is also a question that many of our clients have, like, how do we scale this? Can you share some experiences on that?
Yes, I have a lot of thoughts sort of rising up as you say this. I think the key thing is to be an agile company, a company that is used to change.
Mm-hmm.
Company that's used to experiment, it's used to build and break. Because if you are an agile company, you can go too far into structure and come back. You can try all kinds of things. If you are not an agile company, the design that you have is the design that you have, or you change it very incrementally. So absolutely, you know, so what we did take inspiration also from the Agile manifesto in software. In software has an Agile manifesto, which has some four principles like people and interactions are more important than processes. So that's four interesting principles. And mm-hmm. Agile as an approach to software development has been very, very powerful, right? So in the software industry, to say that you're thinking of building a flat, non-hierarchical, humanistic company, it's not so weird as it might sound in some other industries, because software has already gone through the cycle of trying hierarchy and structure and realized it doesn't work very well, right? So some folks got together some 20 years ago and came up with this Agile manifesto. So what we did was we created our organizational design manifesto. And we said, these are the four principles by which we would evaluate every aspect of org design. So for example, I won't remember them all off the top of my head, but for example, that you know, we would prioritize collaboration over competition. Right? You can also do well with competition, but you can also say, you know what, let's not have individual targets, let's have group targets, right? And
yes,
it's a totally different culture, right? So we had these four points, and maybe I can send you the full list later.
But please, that, please do the list. Yeah.
I'll do that. But that became our internal sort of design, right? Now, the beauty of having a flat non-hierarchical structure also was that as other companies joined us, right, as we acquired new companies, we did about 8 or 9 acquisitions in the last 5-6 years, it was much easier to plug the entrepreneurs into this structure, because no entrepreneur who has built a company by himself or herself for 20 years wants to fit in as part of an org structure, right? So we had this advantage, right? And it became gradually, I think people began to realize that the kind of company we were becoming was tightly linked to the kind of promise we were giving to our clients, the promise we were giving to entrepreneurs who joined us. So it was one consistent truth. Yeah, you can't have a fractured truth. Yeah. So if that's exactly who you are and who you want to be and who you're promising to clients, promising to colleagues who may join you, employees, promising to M&A targets, then that's consistent. And that became very powerful. We still have, to be honest, Nick, you know, we still have senior people sometimes join us. And despite our best filtering, and I'm a bit worried about the filtering also, we don't want to become an ingrown company where everybody speaks the same and there's no diversity. But we do need to filter for senior people especially, because they're very difficult to change. And they're maybe not as open-minded, you know, as we used to be when we were young, right? But we do find senior people sometimes come and join us, and they may find it very difficult to adjust to this new culture. They may find it very difficult to know what is to be done because they don't have anyone telling them what to do. And if they also have to get something done, they can't just go and tell someone what to do. So it's a culture of persuasion. It's a culture of, you know, discussion, persuasion. And they sometimes struggle with it. So it is definitely a challenge, you know, Nick. I think you have to be, you know, treat the company like a living organism, like a pet, right? And you can't just apply rules. Yeah, you have to sort of just keep moving it gradually, or a child, for example, right? You have to keep sort of moving it gradually in the direction that you want to take it. It doesn't go necessarily like with some you know, big quantum jumps. It's more of a process, gradual process.
I love it. And Nick, we hear that now on our podcast for the second time. Your org structure and the unbossed org structure as a huge advantage on the acquisition field.
Yeah.
Manas, you were talking about 8-9 acquisitions. Nick, I immediately had to think about a podcast with Thijs Klaas, who is in the printing industry in Europe, and who has also, Nick, I think, is a serial acquisition, 6 or 7 acquisitions. And what he also told us, Manas, is he sees that even as a competitive advantage, at least for getting these people in. You say the entrepreneurs which you take into your organization, they stay motivated because they stay entrepreneurs. So you are the much more, so to say, attractive company to take them over, right? Did I understand it correctly?
Absolutely, 100%, right? So we are not just the right company to acquire them, but their companies, but also we are able to have them stay rather than leave, take the money and leave. And we are able to have them reinvent our organization, right? Because why do you make an acquisition, right? You don't make it, well, we don't make it for customers or you know, some capabilities alone. We want the entrepreneurs to reinvent the organization. So I have this logo on my t-shirt, this Nagarro logo. And yeah. This was done by an acquisition. We acquired this company. They were really into design and very, very good at understanding branding and marketing, etc. And then they just they came and they redid the logo, right? And a lot of times we have something like this, and it's totally driven from this, again, humanistic idea that many of these people know more about things than you do, right? Yes. Or maybe, you know, just far more capable than you are about many things. And they should drive it, right? And maybe you have a voice, maybe you can influence it, but it's their company. Yeah? They're running it as much as anyone else. So my role, my title even, is when I say CEO, and we had to say a CEO for the listing.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
but we expanded to say not chief executive officer. I don't act like a chief executive officer in any sense of the word inside the company. We call it custodian of entrepreneurship in the organization. And so my job is completely organizational design. That's my job description, right? And we take it very seriously. So all I do is to design the organization and keep reviewing it. And maybe I play a traffic cop sometimes because, you know, there is a need for a complex, large organization to run by certain rules. But that's what I do. And even in the formal description of the duties of the executive board, management board, etc., which we have to file and all of that, very, very formal. Even there, we have taken great pains to make it clear that the people on the management board are just part of a larger management team. So I won't say it's all at one level. I mean, so it's not totally this, that there's absolutely no hierarchy, but there's a management team of 100 people, and these are all 100 superstars, right? And that's how you grow so fast, right? And the way each of these are entrepreneurs, each of these are, you know, driving their own ideas, whether it's a business unit, a vertical or a horizontal, or whether it's just something, a shared service for the whole organization.
Yes.
And they're all doing that, and you're just providing the framework. You're just in charge of the framework.
Mm-hmm. Nick, I love it. And I could ask a 10 follow-ups, but I know for you it's the same situation. Give the word to you, Nick.
Yeah, so there's so much going around in my head. Maybe segue a little bit, just briefly, what I wanted to share with Manas, as he is in the software business. At Antwerp University and Antwerp Management School, I do this guest lecture where we compare how the design of software with the design of organizations. Because actually, the challenges are identical. How do you go about with increasing complexity, and how do you keep it maintainable? Also in the solutions of design, you see actually a lot of similarities. Instead of having one monolithic software system, you're going to have these small classes which interact with each other, which are, in an organizational context, small pizza teams who are interacting with each other. So there's really a lot of comparisons. I just wanted to let you know that that's really a field of study, the comparison between software design and organizational design. I can imagine that interests you. That's one thing. The second thing was the comparison with Dedicate, the printing company, is not only that it's easier to acquire people. I love your driver, that it's not just to get more customers, but that you're inviting them to reinvent the organization. It's a practical example of the agile mindset.
Yeah, and the logo, Nick, think of the logo. I have never heard never ever in a traditional organization that an acquired company comes up shortly after with the whole new corporate logo. That story, I have never heard in my whole life.
Mm-hmm. But there's another similarity as well, Thomas, which is the one consistent message. Whether it's to acquiring companies, whether it's to recruiting people, whether it's to the customer, there's one consistent message. And I also love the example you give, Manas, about the technical documentation, because to me it's really you show that once you have that message and mindset, you're going to try to apply it to every big or small dimension in the company, whether it's the way you set up your contracts with your customers, the way you create the office. You know, you really see this, and it's not a religion. It's more in every aspect of the business. What does it mean if we want to implement and as authentic as possible our beliefs and this message? So that's what's going on. Now, today you're a huge company, flat hierarchy structure, a lot of small teams. The main question we get back from big corporates is, yeah, but A, what about support functions? And B, how do you make sure that teams collaborate with each other, that you don't just get 10,000 silos? How do you make sure it doesn't become chaos?
How do you keep it one company?
Yeah.
No, I think these are very good questions and very practical challenges, right? So let me take these one by one, right? I think it is very similar to software architecture. I mean, I didn't know it was a field of study to find the analogies, but I'm sure somewhere in the back of my mind, these things were influencing each other, right? But coming back to your question, right? So I think that it's very, very important that you have a clear idea of what you're trying to achieve, right? And what are the tools at your disposal? So if you are trying to achieve, for example, a really integrated organization, it's very important then that if you're giving a lot of entrepreneurship and entrepreneurial freedom in each part as part of the design, then you need to have these common structures, right? That becomes very, very important, right? So no different brand names, no different places where people hang out. It's all the same place. Yammer, for example, or internal social media. Maybe some common training systems, common allocation systems, and so on. So there are some tools at your disposal for bringing everyone together, right? So that is for the bringing in terms of even the basic idea that if someone is part of a group within the company and is asked, where do you work? They mention the name of the company, not the name of the group, right? So it's really, really important that there is that. And for that, of course, the company must be something that you take pride in. The company image must be something you take pride in. If the company image is all over the place, and then people may take refuge in other identities. It's a bit like Europe and different countries, right? I mean, if the European identity is surging, and there's a lot of power and prestige, and it's standing up for human rights and it's doing the right thing always for the environment, then the average person wants to identify with Europe. And if Europe is is all in tatters, then the average person may want to be a German or a Bavarian or whatever, right? So I think there's a bit of that. Right? So you want to play that. So I think there's this support is also very interesting, right? So the support functions have a disproportionate influence in terms of how they affect the whole organization. Typically, organizations may have different divisions and then some common support functions. The support functions have to, it's a very tricky question, so I'll choose my words carefully. I think the key thing is that information is easily available, is made available to everyone as much as possible. Expectations are easily available. the expectations are easily made available as much as possible. The first couple of layers of insights on the data are automated and made available as much as possible, so that the first reason that hierarchy exists, which is to point out the obvious, is taken care of, right? So and the reason and support now is what makes this happen. So support now is basically today's day and age is basically data and technology support. You can say you have finances support, HR support, etc. But all of these are ultimately going to be data and technology support teams, right? I mean, there will be a couple of few finance people, but it's going to be data and technology support. So I think you have to think in your company of employee experience, right? And employee is the wrong word, but since that's the only word we have, but in terms of your colleague experience, right? We say Nagarian experience. And I think you should appoint an internal champion or champions who are constantly looking out for internal experience. It's like an icing on the cake over HR and all the other functions, right? They're looking for experience, because ultimately your only differentiation is your employees. I don't even like to use the word, but I'm just using it for now. And how you organize them and how they experience the organization is the only real differentiation you have. Unless you have some patent that you are milking for the next few years, whatever, that's different. But typically,
Or gold mine,
that's also possible. But this is typically what you have. So if you have a company X, then you must have a very specific positioning for company X and a specific employee experience of company X. And then the support team is basically delivering the technology and the data for, on one hand, the experience, on the other hand, the insights and automated support and nudges and expectations and deviations and all that. So that support team completely changes. It morphs from being, you know, a set of functions and people who are running their own silos again and trying to command the company to be together, but to a technology team that is providing the experiences and data support to allow this company's vision of empowering its entire employee base to come to life. It's a very, very, very amazing, change in the way we look at employees. See, let me give you one example. If you take Amazon, right? Amazon, you spend 10 minutes at Amazon in a week, let's say, and Amazon grabs you. It wants you. It needs you. It wants to understand everything about you. Do you have a child? Are you married? Are you single? Where do you live? What do you like? What kind of T-shirt? What kind of, are you an Apple person, Android? It wants to understand you completely. We have employees for 40 hours a week, and we don't care about them. We will send the same mail out to everyone in the company, whether the person is one week with the company, 20 years with the company, one man, woman, you know, we don't care about employees, right? So I think the next phase is going to be companies trying to really focus on the experience of their employees and supporting them with data, insights, expectations as transparently and intelligently as possible, so that most of the reason for the existence of managers goes away. And then only the people who can really coach, you know, beyond that are the people who are in these positions, right? So I don't know. It's a little bit futuristic, but I think we're heading in that direction.
But Manas, I can't hold it back anymore, because I am discussing, or have been discussing, with internal support teams a lot of traditional companies. And now you gave the answer already, but please, I want to hear it from you. These internal functions, Manas, are they working for you? Are they thinking the whole time, how do we make Manas happy? Or are they working for the employees?
So first, it's not the first one, of course. They're not concerned with Manas as a person, right?
Voilà.
I think, again, it's very important that their expectations for the functions are very clear, right? Is it engagement? Is it experience? Is it satisfaction? Is it delight? Is it profitability? Is it, you know, error-free, whatever, right? So the set of expectations, set of different expectations. And that, again, they have it very easy to understand how they're doing themselves, right? And the support functions, of course, are both fall in both camps. They're both the builders and the consumers of this technology infrastructure, right? So they are building it out and also consuming it. But I do believe that it's going to be just like, you know, earlier in 20, 30 years ago, you could put up a bookshop. And if you put a bookshop up at the right place, you did not necessarily have to be, you know, very good at talking to people who came in, etc. And you could do a good job, right?
Yeah.
Because there was no other bookshop nearby. Right. Today, only the very best bookshop will survive. Even number two is a difficult feat. Yeah. Number three is gone. Right. You won't go to number three at all, unless it's a niche bookshop. What I mean is online bookshop, like Amazon. I come back to Amazon. In the same way, simply providing people a wage, a salary, when they can work from anywhere for anyone, this is gone.
It's not going to cut it, no.
Gone. It's gone. The last year, it's just destroyed, right? You could be sitting in, Croatia and working for a company in the valley or anywhere. And this is happening, by the way. And it's dramatically speeded up after last year.
Yeah. Also in consulting, by the way, Manas.
Also in consulting,
It happens also there.
It's everywhere, right? So now, what is a company? A company is a set of experiences. A company is and that is what support has to deliver. It's a fascinating future. Right?
Yeah, and sorry, Thomas, go ahead.
Yeah. And now, Manas, I am talking now out of the role of an employee of you. And what are you providing me, Manas? You are providing me this environment, right? You are telling me, Thomas, here you can live out your skills, competences, your passion, but also your entrepreneurial mindset, right, Manas? That is your job to provide me and the colleagues, obviously, not only me and the colleagues, with this environment. This is your main job. Do I understand that correctly?
Yes, that is the main job, right? And again, I will just be very frank. I'm not saying that this is the exact way it is happening throughout the organization, right? Because it is possible that there are pockets where there's still some more traditional thinking, etc. But just to give you an example, every month, everyone who joins the company is invited to this call, right? And on the call, we ask them, you know, how are we doing? So we say we are, you know, non-hierarchical. We say we are caring. We say, how are we doing on that? And just get a score of how we are doing on all these different things. And then tell them, and typically almost all the management team is there or lots of them are there on the call. And then tell them that every time you sense that we are going against the values that we stand for, please raise a noise, right? Make a noise. Because the company's intent is absolutely to give you this caring, humanistic, non-hierarchical, entrepreneurial experience, a global experience. If you see anything to the contrary, let us know. So yes, that's absolutely the
great idea. Ritual, Manas.
Yeah, it's actually, it reaffirms for yourself as well the commitment. And, you know, by the way, Nick, you know, I'm very nervous that these innovations, while they should morph and adapt and transform over the years, they should not just revert to the traditional when, say, 10 people leave, 10 years later, let's say, right? They need to be embedded in the organization. So now we are at the stage where we are trying to figure out how to make this so much a part of the organization that's very difficult to extricate out by one mm-hmm. leader, two leaders who may be the wrong choices. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so this is...
That's an interesting one, because we have indeed seen cases where the company went through a huge transformation with proven success, and then the management is changed, and in 2 years' time, the entire transformation was just thrown away, and the results as well. So I can see where you're coming from. Yeah, and I also want to thank you for... So with regards to wrap up the support function topic, it was already very clear to me that support functions were becoming these kinds of internal companies serving the experience of the employees. But I just love the insight or the vision that you described on the role of technology there. Because if I understand it correctly, you say everything that we are doing now in support functions is going to be data and technology driven. And then there will be few people who add the human touch to create the full experiences. Just like Amazon is also fully digital, and then they have this human touch to make it 100% success. So thanks for that. Really expanded my view on that topic. So thank you for that, Thomas.
I knew that would trigger you, and you know what was triggering me, because I have to say it now. Also, this democratization of data, but mm-hmm. Manas is speaking the whole time about it. What is a traditional organization? Traditional organization is that the most important company data are restricted to a selected club of executives. And the rest of the organization is excluded from access to this data. And that is exactly the opposite of what Manas just said. Namely, that me as an employee, I have access to this crucial data in order, again, to live out my mission. Also that I loved. And so I interrupted you, Nick. I give
no
the word
worries,
back
no
to
worries.
You.
Looking at the time, Thomas, I mean, we can go on for hours with Manas, that's for sure. But I think he's ready for the final question.
Manas, I am a CEO sitting here in Europe. In a traditional sector, automotive, food production. But Manas, I have seen you on YouTube. I have listened now to this podcast, and I am inspired. I believe in what you are saying. I believe every word of it. And I want to do it. I want to start the journey. I want to be where you are now. I want to be in 3 or 4 years. And now, Manas, I only have 1 or 2 minutes with you. And my only question to you is, what is the biggest mistake, Manas, which I could do in order to blow that, in order to make it fail, despite all my good intentions, which I have?
I think you could go too fast. Yeah, you could theoretically, but practically, you know, I don't see the fear, the reason to fear. I think, you know, there are many small things you can start by doing. Change the titles, change the org structure. We don't even have an org in our company. We don't even have an org chart. Do away with org charts. Think it as a circles. Change the way of thinking. And I think the only thing I would say is that you could go too fast and you could not have a handle on data, right? it's very, very important for you to be able to see, especially in a flat organization which doesn't have this sort of pyramid, to be able to see data and how it fits together. Because now it's not just that the data is being filtered through these pyramids with very, very clear responsibility of who's responsible for what, but rather more complex and richer interactions, right? So I would say you could go too fast and not have a good idea of the data. But other than that, I think there's nothing much to fear. And lots of things that you can do very, very quickly to start to bring about the change.
And experiment with it, Manas. That's what you mean?
Yeah.
And when it doesn't work out in a certain way, and we change it again, that's what you're saying?
Yeah. So I think it's not a wholesale change. I think that's exactly what I'm saying, but I was saying it in a different way, in the sense that it's not a wholesale change that, okay, I have this new design, and tomorrow I'm going to implement it all, right? It's rather that, okay, I bring everyone into confidence, take everyone into confidence. This is where we want to go. And we will have all these efforts and we may have to unwind some of them. But let's start with some smaller things. Let's start with titles. And let's be always open to going back and fixing it again, right? So today, for example, if you change the titles in an organization, it's as though, you know, some open heart surgery has been performed. I mean, that's ridiculous, right? You should be able to change titles every month. What is the title, right? So I think some of these ideas that have sort of, we have lived with a hierarchy for 3,000 years, Nick, as you said, I mean, this stuff we need to throw away. We need to be prouder of ourselves as individuals, prouder of each other as individuals, and all these trappings of office and all of that, you know. So I think, yeah, just coming back to the point, not doing one big wholesale change, but more of small steps, probing steps, and making sure that data and technology is very much part of your journey. Because I think without that, you are, 10,000 people all doing their own thing without hierarchy and without technology is a problem. You'll have chaos. But with technology, it's all possible. I run a software company, so it's also helpful.
Well, it's strange.
True and not true, because I worked in software businesses also, and often the discussions on technology are even more difficult than in a traditional company or in another business, because everybody has an expert opinion on which technology is the best. So those are often the most difficult discussions in a software business.
I have to tell you what I take away and what fascinates me so much is this pragmatic approach which you are taking. When you explain your organization, when you explain the why, it sounds so natural that every listener must ask him or herself, okay, how the hell would you ever choose a different organization? So this natural flow, and this what you also call pragmatic view on things, that sticks with me. And that makes it so charismatic. And that is food for my mind now, today, for all the hours on the motorway I have in front of me. And because I'm standing in the middle of Germany here, 50 kilometers away from Frankfurt, I have to ask you this question, Manas. Why did you choose the wonderful Frankfurt Stock Exchange for the IPO?
Well, Allgeier was listed on the Frankfurt Stock Exchange, and we were a spin-off from Allgeier. And we honestly believe it's all a global world, right? We are very proud to be in Germany. And, Germany is also a very big market for us. And it's great to be on the S-Tax today. I think it's a global world. I think we are all global citizens. And it just adds to the, we have a lot of fun and a lot of excitement. And it is just connecting the world together through our work. So it worked out very well for us.
Thanks, Manas. I didn't know the Allgäuer connection. Now clear to me. Please, let's stay in contact. As you say, it's a global world. Obviously, we are in contact also with many, many corporates. You know that we are injecting this mindset in this spirit in these corporates. And I could very well imagine that also there, that would be, you know, a perfect match with many of our clients. Thank you so much. Give the word to Nick.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Manas. Absolutely loved it. Relate with a lot of things you've been saying, and also some you shared also some things that really were some personal breakthroughs for me, expanded my awareness on the topic, and loved your energy. Can't wait to release this episode and share it with our listeners. I wish you a fantastic week, and let's stay in contact.
Likewise, great speaking with you guys, and keep this unbossing flag up.
And the record button is pushed, because we have to do our retrospective, Nick. Now, I can't wait. And I start with this wonderful, wonderful mindset of how Manas was describing or making his own job description, his own role. Did you hear that, Nick?
Custodian of... Yeah, go ahead.
Say it.
Yeah, custodian of entrepreneurial... And then I stopped noting. I didn't understand. I didn't understand the last letter. You did?
Look, he is the custodian of the entrepreneurial culture. He is the custodian of this whole organizational mindset, which he has to install, which has to be installed. And you heard that also in the DNA. Why? In order that not even one bad successor or bad successors could ever destroy it anymore. And what does he say with that, Nick? He says with that his customers are, of course, his people. It's me, Thomas, the Nagaro employee sitting somewhere in Paris. I am his customer, and that is his promise to me. This is so powerful, and you know exactly why, Nick.
Absolutely. It's super inspiring to hear a 10,000 company CEO stating that the only thing he's doing is organizational design and organizational experience. That's what we believe in, Thomas. That's what we believe.
And therefore, I was so keen on him saying that. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, and well, I mean, the quote that I've written down that translates that pragmatic mindset in one sentence is, guys, it's not a religion. It's just common sense. And that's, I love that quote, because often by traditional people, I don't know why they protect this 3,000-year-old command and control model. as if we are now in the that this is the perfect product, the organizational nirvana, and that somehow after 3,000 years we will stop evolving. But sometimes they put on a table like, this is religion, this is, but it's not. It's common sense. It's honoring the good of the past, honoring the good of command and control structures, but at the same time also having common sense and seeing that we can do much, much, much better, and that we need to evolve.
Nick, I fully agree with you. That is what I meant, what I was also saying. It sounds so natural. And I immediately had to think of your love for flowers, which you often use as a metaphor, where you also say, hey, guys, why should it be different in the best organization form, right? Now, next one, Nick. You remember your org structure makes your difference. I say your org design will make the difference. This was so powerful. Every company today can hire people from Egypt. Hell, we are doing it at the moment, Nick, by the way. Every company has access to the talent, has access to the skills, has access to funds which can pay salaries. Everybody can do it. What makes your difference? What is it? If you are either you have a patent, you have a gold mine, you have a concession for exploiting train activity in Australia. If you don't have all of that, it's your organization, stupid. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep. Identity and experience. Your company identity for which people want to choose and the experience they have once they start working within the company. Those are the two key ingredients.
And products which you are supposed to deliver to your CEO customers, which is your people. Mm-hmm. Right, Nick?
100%. My next key takeaway, and I'm it's not like it's a new insight, but I'm so glad that he it got snowed under a little bit, and I'm so glad that Manas put it back on the table. We often say that when you go from the oil tanker to a fleet of speedboats, the glue is the shared identity, the shared purpose, which is true.
Yeah.
However, it's the shared purpose and technology, data and technology. And Manas has put that so beautifully on the table that the pyramid has a function, and the function is to assess, gather all the information, analyze the information, move it upwards so decisions can be taken. If you replace this with hundreds of speedboat teams, you have to replace the function of the pyramid with something else. And that something else requires technology and data. So it's not a new insight, but it's something that I will never, ever leave out again when we talk about the glue of a big organization and all the teams that are working in there.
It's an interesting one indeed, Nick. And it also makes a bit the link to your own personal past, right? It triggers something in you when you hear that.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It triggers something. And I was already thinking, how do you inspire organizations on this path? Because coming with the requirement of a shared purpose and a shared identity, most people get. But in many corporate organizations, there's already an overload of technology, which is often not experienced as good by employees. So bringing in the message, guys, if you want this to work, you need data and technology. I'm curious how this is going to land, because typically corporate organizations, they're not good at data and technology, especially with regards to employee experience.
I agree, Nick. And of course, there is always this danger we are talking about often enough to give priority to a certain tool, whatever it is now, say, guys, this is what you have to install, and everybody, and suppose they say yes, and then everybody is obsessed with this tool, which violates then again the rule mindset before tools. So it was an interesting dilemma.
Yeah, but actually, now that we're discussing it, the technology and the data are just the means. The end goal that Manas also clearly talked about was making information and expectations easily available for everyone.
Available.
And that's the end goal.
Yeah. And do you also remember immediately the podcast with Thijs Glass, where he said everybody in our organization, even ex people, in that case, they have all the information, And how I am always, stunned when I hear that. Coming from a traditional environment, knowing very well, it's an exclusive club. I used to belong to that club. Who has the data and how much that says about an organization if that is democratized?
Mm-hmm.
It's great stuff.
Great powerful stuff. And I've written 4 pages of notes, but we'll leave it here, and we're off to the next one.
Indeed, Nick. Indeed, we are.